have talked about very like similar yet very varied experiences in different kinds of academic spaces and with your families also. And we talked about resilience. So all of this sort of brings me to think about these things at a more institutional level also, while we're talking about individual experiences. So if you could sort of talk a bit about how do you think if universities in Indian academia are adequately equipped to provide solutions or, you know, deal with these issues, and what have your experiences been with your respective institutions when it comes to mental health resources?
I have been thinking about this a lot more recently, and in terms of understanding mental health in academic institutions, for me, I would say is non-existent, because you see, just the Indian education system in itself, let's go back from, you know, our schooling, the couple of years that I studied in India, I remember the fact that I got slapped once and I came home crying, like miserable. And it was a whole big thing for me because I had never seen a teacher speak to me like this ever. And the school did not understand why was it a big deal. Why was it a big deal that a teacher slapped a student and her parents have turned up and created a big hullabaloo about it. Mm. And it was like that for me. And I've always felt that in education spaces, like I mentioned earlier, hierarchy, the idea of sir, ma'am, and that continues in college where we consider our seniors also like that. We look at things and that hierarchy continues, you know, very deeply. And because of that, I believe that the idea of showing your vulnerability, that this is how I feel, I'm scared, I am anxious, I cannot, present in a certain way, or I cannot speak up in front of the class in a certain way, and how, where that person comes from, what is that person's background, caste, class, gender, and then their trauma that is coming from all of that, there is no room for that, and not even in academics. And let's say that for me, over the years, of course, the students, and then obviously the teachers as well. I would just like to jump to one, the National Law University, Bhopal. And when I went there, so the results of the entrance exam were put all over the university, right? Mm. At the library, at the ad block, at hostels. So everybody knew what caste you were, what was your name, where you came from, and what were your marks? And that happened throughout the year.
And this is posted everywhere, not just like on one notice board.
Not on one notice board. And every teacher knew. So the five-year law LLB students and the LLM students, every professor knew every student through a certain image. And that was through the list of marks, their category, where they come from. And I remember then, you know, studying in Bhopal, my spirit was crushed. It was crushed because that is what I felt when I went there. I just, at that phase, I was already in a very demoralized phase of my life and I was going through many, many issues. But actually being there, I realized that anxiety of competition that comes in, and then just knowing that whether you're a reserved category student or whether you're from another category student, how the quota division is working, people are only approaching you from that image. There is your intellectual capacity or just the an individual's personality and background is not taken into account in just Indian educational system anywhere. So even if we look at JNU and Center for Women's Studies, where we, JNU and let's say a lot of other central universities in India have seen movements where we're talking about Dalit people in academia and suicides, and so many conversations have come up in the last couple of years. But I think somewhere we have all felt that, is this really a moment of genuine empathy, or is this a moment of coming from saying that we acknowledge the difference and that's it?
Viraj, would you want to add more?
I think you know what Santavna has said. I think this is what I want to further take it. You know, when this entire idea of acknowledging it, and you know, because I think the current times, or I think prior to like last 10 years, probably whenever this entire massive thing has come up to, you know, recruit counselors within the institutional areas, and you know, as a tokenistic representation that we care about the students, it has been done. So it is also first is it has done, but again, you know, why I'm using the term tokenistic, because these are inaccessible things, and you know, and these are also, there is this entire idea that with mental health, one-time intervention, and you know, perfectly everything is fine. You'll go to a therapist, you go to a health center, and you're going to turn out, you know, this bright person who is okay with being Dalit, who is okay being, you know, you are just going to fit into this entire casteist, Brahminical, you know, very patriarchal idea, heteropatriarchal idea. You believe in all the structures the way it is. So I think that's the idea of you say, of, you know, sending a person to a therapist also to get you training back that, you know, whatever the hell you are thinking is wrong. So one is that it's a one-time intervention, right? And I'm making a sarcastic remark just to put it out that there, because psychologists are trained in this fashion that there is, in a psychiatry, it's a complete, you know, guru shishya parampara. You can't even, what I think Santavna was also mentioning in other parts of it, this entire junior senior thing, you can't say it that, you know, it's wrong, or probably I'm feeling this way. That's the same is shifted in academia. So one is that part of it, that what are we looking even, you know, what are the kind of interventions, and even, you know, when you're acknowledging it, the difference, and what's the way forward, because how much, you know, how much blood do you need? How much, you know, the, you know, silence, you know, what do you need to just make it, you know, more, you know, reflective processes that you do something about it, because that's clearly is not happening. So one is, I think, to just put it out there that it's nothing, that it's nothing new anyway. We have now history. There has been a lot of a thing, and still we see that there is a complete lack of, you know, very ideally, you know, just like going and doing something about it. So one is to establish that. But I think the second problem, which I wanted to problematize it, that what after your education, right? What happened to a person who is coming from a margin after the educational institute? You know, unemployment is going on a high rate. If somebody is distressed, and specifically somebody from a Dalit queer community, being a woman, these are very genuine concern. When we say, you know, we are distressed about certain things, we are distressed because we know we will not get jobs. So, and even in therapy room, it's so called, what will you do to that? No, because you're anyway producing us in that setting, that, and then you're saying be resilient. Resilient with what? No, like, I don't have, I'm like worried about how I'm going to get like bread and butter for my family, or, you know, like there is like a lot of things I probably may not even be able to take care of myself. And you want me to be resilient? Oh, come on. Like, I think I'm enough resilient with those part of it. I think we need to be very critical of this tokenistic interventions now onwards. These are highly, highly inaccessible. Counselors are made to report to the educational, you know, representatives. You know, if any, I know personally, you know, with other, it's a global practice also, and there are very less global universities, those who are quite open to persons with disability, and specifically with psychosocial disability. By the time you tell them you have a mental illness or anything, they try to send you home. They want to inform your parents. They go very, literally, very, you know, they become very hostile towards you. There is a very asylum oriented sort of, you know, this structure is given to you that, you know, to be just a little, you know, scared of this person, and you don't know how to intervene. So I think this is very, very complex that, you know, so yeah, this I just wanted to bring up this part here.
Right. So Neeraj, you mentioned rightly so about the training that psychologists themselves get. So just a quick question, like if you could talk a bit about queer affirmative therapy and queer affirmative counseling, and what how is that training in that sense different?
Okay. I think so quickly, just to tell you, the entire idea of queer affirmative training was basically by lived experiences. So it's the module which is by lived experience people, those who are queer and therapists and also lived experiences, and they have come up together. So it's basically learning from the margins what works for them, what mental health is for them. So I think that's how the model looks like. So it talks about unique stressors. And the entire idea is also not to replace the psychological models, but also just to work with that part of it and, you know, see what works the best for the queer client as a margin. So I think it's also a good sort of a strategy that, you know, somewhere I have been also looking at my work, you know, when we went to talk about. So it's something which is also one can understand as a feminist counseling model to look at it from a very woman's perspective and not put it into, you know, the patriarchal notion. So I think further, we can also build upon other affirmative models in the same fashion. So I think this is how the queer affirmative model looks like.
Right.
These are quite interesting insights. And in fact, I was also wondering, I mean, I personally have like a lot to say on how our academic institutions are equipped or not equipped to deal with these mental health resources and mental health issues of the students, and even for that matter, the faculty members and staff members. And like as Santana also mentioned, like, are we, like, is there empathy? And as you, Neeraj, mentioned that, how much blood more do we need to for people to just take these things seriously? And just taking that point forward, I was wondering wherein, like right now, if we look at the larger situation in our country, wherein there are recurrent incidents of violence against minorities, it has been happening almost on a daily basis and on a very larger systemic basis. And do you think that has the capacity of affecting people's mental health on a very personal basis, on a very one-on-one basis? And moreover, like as research scholars, wherein we are living in a time when the government and the authorities are not particularly supportive of the research environments and the knowledge production, to say the least, I mean, with the new policy as well, I mean. And so do you think like a systemic issue can also affect our mental health? Any of you can go ahead.
Yes, I certainly think that it does. Firstly, PhD, doing a PhD itself is a journey that people don't acknowledge enough. That it is a journey where your research will intersect with your personal life and your idea of what is success because of the way researchers are treated in this country in totality.
Right.
The doctoral studies and the way research is conducted and the way research is appreciated as a method of actually changing government policies, public policies, changing and transforming systems. Research is not, especially social science or and furthering that into interdisciplinary research, is not given enough state support as well as just recognition. And continuing on from there, I think that obviously the current scenario in itself, when we are with whatever is happening around us, the amount of insecurities and unsurety that we had to deal with, I think we all know in this current time what we have seen in JNU and in many other institutes, you know, the fear of, let's say, our center being shut down at some point, or just our fellow not coming through, or so many issues that we have seen since we became members of, we became research scholars in a university space. And it obviously the larger politics has impacted it. And I mean, there is, whenever you're doing, I mean, the amount of discussions I've had with people doing a PhD, and that sense of pointlessness and demotivation that occurs within our own work, and to continue motivating yourself. So even that is why I think my personal impact, my personal experience, my personal journey with my research keeps me personally motivated. But it is, we cannot deny that whatever is happening around us is definitely going to impact the way we conduct our research. and the way research will be conducted in the future. Yeah.
Right. Neeraj, what do you think about it?
I think what, you see, uncertainty, of course, even because of this entire political situation and also during the pandemic, I think so uncertainty can become a very big basic idea of anxiety. So anxiety is also can be triggered in with this uncertainty part of it. So, of course, one is there. I think what Sandhavna has just said it also completely agree with the insecurity part of it. But also, I think to just like take this to also complicate it when we talk about systematic violence, I think this is the entire thing, what even unsound or otherwise, I think we are trying to talk about it, is that who is actually disabled is something that, you know, we need to ask, because it's a person, you know, who belongs to margin, of course, you know, they just want to have their life quite normally, but this entire structure, right, becomes a very disabling environment, because it surely is not an enabling environment for us to reach our potential. So I think it is completely that this is the structural problem that, you know, put hazards on our mental health, because every time you just go, you face stigma, you are told what you can do, what you cannot do, because, you know, it's access to water. It's a basic thing. It's also to just, you know, where you can poop, where you can't poop, and, you know, what to do with the poop, and, you know, who is going to clean the poop. So I think something that which we ignore every day in part of our life becomes very difficult. Very, very, very serious conversation for some of us, and also who you can sleep with, who you can have sex, who you can love, who you can, you know, just like be around, who you can have house, who, you know, like the entire question of a citizenship and etc. It's like completely personal, because it's you don't know what's going to happen to you tomorrow. So it's also not that you're living, you know, you are thinking of a very future part of it or anything, but because, you know, you're very scared of everyday survival. And I think even in like a lot of otherwise social work training, psychology, or as just humans also, I think we know how much it is good when you have some sort of a plan. It gives you some sort of, you know, sense of security. So I think that's completely not there. What in terms of, you know, what they recently did in Jamia University, they shut down the women's center, gender and women's center. It has been shut, and it was happened in this period only when the lockdown started. So as a researcher, you are just, and now you have a new, you know, education policy. MPhils are not part of, you know, they have been scrapped off. And so
I know,
right? And then, you know, you're wondering that, you know, okay, you know, what is this? There's so much of anxiety related to it, because I think as research, as a, you know, I think gender women scholars, we know the importance of, you know, the things we are working on, and I think it's something we need to do it, and it's not also easy. It's a very, very, you know, laborious work. It's something that we believe in. It's something that we want to commit our, you know, we want to build our scholarships on. And you realize that, you know, you don't have centers to work, or you, where will you go and have job also, right? So I think, again, this comes back to as a student that, you know, okay, now, you know, where should I just locate my career, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this becomes very, very difficult then, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, this leads me to also then wonder, like, Sandhana, you referred to the hierarchy between the supervisor-supervisee relationship, you know, referring to them as sir, ma'am, or when Neeraj, you talked about the experience of separate hostels on different floors. So I was also wondering that, do you feel that discriminations within university spaces sort of create social distancing, you know, further adding to the already difficult situations, as Sandhana also pointed out, PhD in itself is a task in that sense, further adding to the difficult situations or conditions for research? And, you know, how are these reflected in the supervisor-supervisee relationships? Any one of you can start.
Yes, I feel it certainly does create like a social distancing, segregation, certain groups. What I have noticed in my experience of people doing research, I found that like my sister, she's also done her PhD from JNU, and I've had these conversations with her and other friends, and how they have felt more comfortable with working with a supervisor who is either from the same region or who is either from, you know, the same caste. And those divisions do exist. And for me, let's say that, you know, you don't find a lot of academics who are from Uttar Pradesh and who are Dalit, neither. That sort of representation is kind of low in academia. And I when I had to choose a supervisor, I myself had to go through certain, you know, things that I looked for where I felt comfortable enough to be able to have an open communication about my insecurities, vulnerabilities, anxieties about doing research and being vulnerable, and to create that space, to have that confidence to be able to do that, I went through my own struggle, and through therapy, I found that, through basically realizing that academia is a very savarna space. And a part of me started keeping that savarna space to succeed. And over that time, I realized I was identifying myself in a very different way, and I struggled with that. And these divisions have, you know, a lot of students who have problems with, let's say, language or just comfort, the language, their identities, their backgrounds that they come from, and especially coming to higher spaces of academia where you have to, where any supervisor-supervisee relationship becomes a very personal, close relationship. It is very difficult to create that bond, and that is why people choose supervisors whom they can connect with on these levels. And it's sad, you know, for me, I think that is extremely disappointing that is how people feel comfortable. I will work under XYZ because I feel that they will understand where I'm coming from better. Right. So to make it for academics to be a more organic space in itself, like I've said, India or in totality, but in India in general, because we have such complex divisions in our society, these divisions are very hard to break. And these are conversations that we need to be having. And this is exactly why, you know, something like what you people have collaborated to do is amazing work.
Thank you.
Neeraj.
Yay.
Yeah. I think I am almost in agreement with, you know, what Santavna has said it. But I think for personally with me, I think I have had like good experiences in couple of the spaces, specifically in Bombay for showing this, and also in the current times also. But I think without a doubt, I think I will just say that even as I think, because I was also quite clear when I went to a couple of places that, you know, who I want to work with and which center I was applying to. So I was also strategic, but also I think it was quite strategic in terms of the queer identity. I think most of the people have no clue about caste issues. So also just to put it out and loud there. And it's very, very, I think I've also, I don't know, this is something I feel that I need to share it, that I think I've also come to this acceptance that I know that I need to do extra labor to get the caste resources and, you know, work on my own or, you know, read a lot by myself, reach out to peer scholars, because, you know, I have been into this conversation with a couple of times with my supervisor where I'm just like, okay, there is no point also to bring a caste conversation because this person won't understand. So I think I've reached that stage and I'm just like, okay, Chika, I'll just bring it up in my thesis. That's fine. And, you know, I'll probably just make my argument in the so-called Savarna language, you know, empirical, very referenced and et cetera. So I think that has been the case. But I think also just to, you know, comment on this, another supervisee sort of, it's again a very good Shishya, very harmonical sort of an ideology entirely, right? That Shishya cannot raise a question, no? Because you're only supposed to listen to the guru. So you know, when we are saying it's Savarna, you know, that's what we are something meaning it, because when you raise a question, that entire idea is that how can you raise a question? Because irrespective of, you know, anything of your caste or etc., but as a student, you are just supposed to be something that, you know, you are a this blank box which just needs to be filled. You have no agency. You don't know anything. And I think in the other cases where, you know, there are sexual violences happening, you know, towards a lot of gender non-conforming or, you know, women, peer of minds and etc. That get very, you know, it's very erased in this conversation, and how this entire guru becomes this person, you know, who is amazing and, you know, he can do anything with you. But yeah, it's really, really problematic. And you know, I always wonder that, you know, how to engage with them. Because, you know, I have reached that situation, I'm like, oh God, you know, how to tell them, you know, like, even if you tell them, they are in this power and position, you know, I need recommendation letter. Like, I'll bring that.
Right, exactly. Oh my God. I'm sorry, yeah, I just got too excited about this.
I also got very excited. Just from that, I know, because when I came to women's studies and I realized that, okay, I have now at this point in my life and at this age, if I'm planning to do a PhD, I have to make sure that my research is, whereas, you know, I take this journey of producing and theorizing everything that I've studied all along. And in that, this is what I've realized over the past couple of weeks. I've realized that I shut out vulnerability from my interaction within the academic space. Yeah. Nobody knows what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. Right. I am just portraying myself as this person who comes, who presents, who does her work to what is required. And that's it, because I need those recommendation letters. I need that center. I need to, you know, to grow. And that's when I realized that, oh God, I am becoming, you know, another person. This is not me. And this is something I have to work on, where I'm still trying to unpack my own identity in terms of to grow, to succeed. I had to think in a certain way, work in a certain way, produce my work in a certain way, speak in a language which was in a certain way to get that support. Maybe it has been diplomatic, and I still feel maybe sometimes I am still slightly, you know, diplomatic with my understanding of things, because I am also scared of if I speak up, I will be, you know, let's say like, you'd be targeted, saying that these are people who are burned, or they just speak because now they can, or what, you know, just the idea that because a lot of anger, that emotion, or a lot of emotions that come with producing your work through personal identity, you end up getting anger. Mm-hmm. So I felt that there was so much anger inside of me when I would be talking about my work, which was pointed out by a lot of my friends. They said, when you talk about your work, you sound so angry. And then I started thinking about this. I said, where is this anger coming from? Mm-hmm. And I'm suppressing so many of my emotions, so many of my thoughts, so many of my words, maybe because I'm just trying to fit in. And irrespective of the fact that, you know, I have the language, I have I've luckily had the privilege, which for me it has not been a privilege, because there has been a struggle of just access to education for me, for my family. But to be able to be where I am today, I know the struggle that I have had, or my father has fought for, to support me to do whatever I want to do in terms of my work. And in all of that, just being able to speak about it, there is not a space of actually showing real vulnerability. And especially, we've talked about this, I feel like when we're talking about spaces where, you know, where we're talking about gender and we're talking about so many other things, they're not going to talk about your own experiences in a vulnerable space where you don't feel safe to talk about your own experiences, then how are we actually collectively growing? Or are we really?
True. Very true. Neeraj, were you also saying something? Did we like cut you off between?
No, I like the excitement. I think at least something which was something, you know, common as a scholar, it's a good validation also, no? Yeah. So I think, but see, this is the entire idea, right? With the Savarna places, it's also probably not working for most of us, and it's also not working for some of the people from the margins, because I think then Sandhana beautifully put it, as you know, that where you can express your vulnerability, you cannot express it, etc. So I think it becomes very, very difficult. And you know, aap kahan pe jaake bologe, aap kisko bologe na, wo bhi ek baat hai. Aap apne andar hi rakhoge. So I think then it becomes your distress spectrum altogether. That it's a everyday part of it, na? Ki to, I think then just like very overwhelming as a person also to just, you know, deal with so much of emotion. And then you're living in bits and pieces, no? You're living in small times. And sometimes you're not also living, you're just surviving those times.
Right.
You're just like, okay, you know, let's just go for this meeting and get it done. And the things which should be very enjoyable processes have turned out to be so hostile that, you know, one is scared. Like, I know there's so many times I've been just scared to, you know, just like go to one room and I'm like, not again, you know, but then you're just like, okay, what to do with
it?
And, you know, then you're just like standing and you're like, well, it is so, you know, it's so funny, but it's so sad, you know, when I speak to a couple of my peers and they're like, ab hame aadat ho gayi hai besti karane ki. And they're like, now I'm mentally prepared that this has to happen. And, you know, I'm specifically talking even with the caste context and, you know, with a lot of other context also where there's a junior and senior relationship. And they're like, I don't know what to do it. You know, I'll just either zone out because it's very difficult for me to be in that situation. And I don't know what to do it because I'm very helpless. And that it's very clear that another person is, you know, not really making it easy for you. So I think that overall we need to do something about, you know, this supervising. Yeah.
True.
That's actually true. And in fact, on like the exciting topic of recommendation letters, we'd also like posted an Instagram story a few days ago, and wherein we also got like, so we asked people what they feel about the recommendation culture and everything. And there were a lot of people were definitely arguing like how it has its own casteist roots and that you need to have like a certain amount of social capital, and that is how you will get into certain groups and clouds, and that academic clout is certainly necessary because Indian academia is like such a small industry, or it's such a small field, it's such a small space, everyone knows everyone, and if you like mess up with some hi-fi star professor, then you are actually just gonna be ruined. And as you needed rightly said, and I mean, it's just so sad, and it's like a tragicomic incident. I mean, wo besti karane ki mein aadat hi ho gayi hai. I mean, I personally, when I came out with my own mental health issues, and so since then I faced a lot of shit by a lot of professors, and it's just that now I just assume that, yeah, they are going to behave like this, and I might as well just consume this shit because there is no other way of dealing with it. And that becomes even further annoying, if nothing else, because when you think about academia, you think of it as like this, you know, open-ish space. I mean, it's not supposed to be as horrible as like, say, a corporate-ish space wherein there is a community. There is... like there is supposed to be at least a sense of a community, and like you can establish your own networks of care for that matter, because everyone is so well read and whatever and whatnot. And but clearly that is not happening, which is quite sad. But I was also then thinking in terms of like, say personally, when you like, so when anyone has like, say, some form of mental health issues, if they are grappling with some stuff, then how do we, like the way we also build relationships, be it like, say, friendships or romantic relationships, or even like, say, as we just talked about, the academic relationships, and how do we make sense of those? And like, having mental health issues is not necessarily restricted to, okay, aaj mujhe panic attack aaya aur aaj mujhe anxiety attack aaya and it's not, or aaj mera depressive episode tha. It's certainly not just that. I mean, it's an everyday, it's a very lifelongish almost kind of a process. So in that space, what do you think are your thoughts on that? I mean, from a very personal perspective, as well as how we look at community care in a larger framework as community support systems. So yeah, that is pretty much my question. I'm not sure if I was clear.
I think I've also realized that it's a journey for most of us, you know, those who are either have figured it out that we're living with anxiety or some sort of psychosocial disability. So the entire idea is to also invest with ourselves and also understand that how this specific thing, you know, the psychosocial disability look for us and what kind of, you know, personality I have. And it's like, I know I'm speaking like in a very like a therapist-y way, but also as a lived experience, I've seen it that this works better for us to also understand ourselves, take a break and to have a clear understanding that this is as a person and these are my issues and this is me, you know, like,
yeah.
And I'm also dealing with it. And also decide how much you want to be open, you don't want to be open. So I think have your coping mechanism in places and etc. So that's a one thing that I always say to anybody who is living with it, anxiety. And also, you know, just to be a little empathetic towards yourself, ki agar aaj panic attack hua hai, toh, you know, theek hai, agar ek din main kaam nahin karungi ya karunga na, toh chalo koi baat nahin. मेरे को पता मेरे साथ होता है कोई और एम्पैथी तो नहीं देगा मुझे मैं ही कर दे देता हूँ अपने आप को सो एटलीस्ट आई ट्राई टू बी अ लिटिल काइंड टू माय सेल्फ यू नो तो दुनिया तो आ ही जाएगी पीछे काम करो सो वन इज दैट आई थिंक टू ट्राई टू बी अ लिटिल ओके विद द पार्ट ऑफ इट दैट आई गेट एंजाइटी और आई गेट पैनिक और यू नो आई एम लिविंग विद दिस स्पेसिफिक पार्ट ऑफ मी इट्स पार्ट ऑफ मी सेकेंड आई थिंक when you're talking about other relations and etc आई थिंक unfortunately I think I've also realized that how much there's like this lot of burden as a person, you know, living with certain things, you have to take it up because, you know, it's like very tedious. You have to keep on telling people what not to do and etc. I think with me personally, with a lot of my relationships, so I know that a lot of my, you know, ex-lovers, those who have told me that they want to be there for me, and I know in that process how many times what I've told them not to do, they have done it.
Yeah.
And you know, they think it's okay to do it. And they feel, arre nahin, I was just kidding. So, you know, I think I what I'm basically sharing is that what has worked for me, that you know, I tell people very clearly, I'm like, this is something that I can deal with, and this is something which I can't deal with. These are the words that, you know, really triggers me. So if you're talking to me, please try not to use these words. This is I'm not very okay to with it. And also you also tell me what works for you. You know, if it's too much for you to, you know, talk to me, then you just tell me, you know, if you feel that you just can't hear for me, just tell me, at least don't leave me hanging, leave me abandoned, or, you know, we can have this mutual support to each other, you know. So I think I've worked around on those issues with a lot of people. In academia, I will just clearly say no. Like, I don't expect my supervisor to be kind to me, and I don't think so they will be. So also, I'm just going to be very blunt with it. And I don't think so. I am even imagining that part in my life, at least to, I don't think so. Abhi tak wo mere dil mein aayi bhi hai ki baat, I can go and tell my academic supervisors that these are the things and etc.
Yeah.
But in other relationships, I feel that you can do it. You can figure it out with the people, those who have language of the mental health. So if you're also thinking that you will do it with the family members, those who don't understand mental health same in the same language, the way you do it, then you also take a step back that, you know, as a young person, probably you know it a little better. See what your families and other people have the language of mental health and what can be the way forward and what will work. So I think these are the practical things that I've seen and what works for me. Otherwise, people are just going to make your life horrible, yeah. So sorry, I think it's the last part, but yeah, no, over to you, Sandra.
हाँ, this is like, ये कहाँ dark है, ये तो ज़िंदगी है, ऐसे हो रहा है.
But yeah, Sandra.
Yeah, I believe that it is very difficult. First of all, it is very difficult to figure out our own issues and what are our triggers, what brings me anxiety, and then to put that across. So first of all, taking that own journey of figuring out your own issues, yes, getting that, seeking that clarity in a space where I'm doing therapy, and then to further communicate it to other people is a whole different struggle, right? This is how I feel. I feel that you know, I I have to first figure out that this is my breakthrough. This is what has impacted me. This is how I need to be, soft on myself, love myself more, or just finding all the language, the terminologies of putting across how I feel in a way that people will understand. So the language of anxiety, which I think is developing now, the language of mm-hmm. depression, which I think is now we see that we can, there is a format or a certain structure that we can use to communicate to people, but it's a very long journey, and it's an everyday struggle. Like Neeraj was also saying, that there is a generational gap, and then there is a cultural gap, and then if we add Indian society, then there are many other gaps and differences, right, in all together.
Yeah.
So we are not only breaking like a generational gap in totality when we talk about mental health, it's breaking a lot of social norms, right? If we speak from the gendered aspect, it's women are ostracized for being hysterical. The moment a woman is talking about this is my anxiety, it's hysteria. She's hormonal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. The idea of pregnancy in Indian culture, where a woman is still working, but because she's pregnant, she's treated in a certain way. So even just the idea of acknowledging a woman's body through pregnancy, the hormonal changes she's going through, her postpartum depression, so many things, if we break that in the Indian culture, and obviously abroad, we've seen the idea of women and hysteria being at least questioned, but not in India, right? And it is very difficult to talk about mental health then. At the end of the day, people are going to come from a space of saying that we are trying to understand what you're saying, but you know, this could, the bias does not go away. The little skepticism does not go away.
True.
And how do we break that? That is still something we're working on. Now, luckily, we have a language, we have a format, people are talking about it. But it's in our everyday lives, even with the support I have had from my family and friends, but to tell them that, listen, I'm a sensitive person, I will overthink everything that you tell me, and I will choose my brain will choose the most negative things. They're not going to look at the positive things. That is my anxiety. And I'm going to sit for 3 days just thinking and overthinking and not being able to get out of bed because someone has said something to me. And like Neeraj said, that from my supervisor, I don't expect it. So that's how I took my academic space. I don't expect empathy there. I don't expect people for me to realize that I can't get up out of bed until I took it upon myself that, you know what? I'm going to be that vulnerable. I'm going to tell them that this is it. I can't do it. I need to communicate my issues in a certain way. And I did it. But, you know, I felt a certain kind of guilt that, am I really overplaying my issues? Yeah. Maybe I should just push through. Maybe I should just, you know, get up and survive through. So many people are doing this. Why can't I? Why am I experiencing anxiety about this deadline or just everything? Why am I so overwhelmed with a certain application or just even emailing a professor for some help to check a draft of mine or something? And to explain to people, to unpack these conversations with my family, with my friends, I need to know my own issues. And I feel that it's such a journey for the world and people and everyone to realize that these are such normal conversations that we as a society collectively have to imbibe to, if there is going to be any change, to normalize conversations about anxiety, about what is triggers, what is positive affirmations, what are the changes that can bring through, let's say, going into the medical system of understanding depression and anxiety and to normalize it. Because the moment a doctor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist for a lot of people comes into the picture, the fear of, just the idea of being not normal is also there. And I feel that I constantly have this insecurity inside of me that if I'm talking about my mental health to people, will they actually... are they really understanding where I'm coming from, or are they just trying to be nice to me about it? You know, that we understand.
Yeah.
Because one thing is, if you personally experiences, like for me, my journey with mental health started with a personal experience where I went into it and I realized, okay, this is something I have to do. And I have to start going through my issues through a medical space, through taking medication and through seeking therapy. But in doing that, I was very scared, and I have been scared to try to seem as if now I'm better. There was a phase in my life, but now I'm better. Instead of me saying that this is how I'm always going to be. And that's been with finding partners, being able to be vulnerable with them about this, being able to be vulnerable about my parents, that today I don't want to get out of bed, you know. To even my sister, anybody. I think it's very difficult because because we're living with these larger ideas of, you know, this world of a hustle culture, this hustle culture that we see. Get up out of
God, that is,
have a reason, hustle, 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 make money, life goals, what is success, these ideas. And I think that has also created a lot of pressure for me, where I'm like, Am I ever going to be, you know, able to achieve anything that I want to achieve, because I don't want to get out of bed someday, or I just don't want to even check my emails or look at my phone. And talking about these things and telling people and normalizing it is, I think, a very, very long journey.
Right. That's true. I mean, like Sanjana, you talked about the language of anxiety and depression, and it's irony bolo kya bhi bolo, like, you know, I've had a very bad day since morning where I was actually, I mean, on call with even IUC and talking about similar things, that, you know, kya questions hai, whether the binary exists between, okay, getting better or will I be better, etc. And similarly, you know, abhi, the kind of language you also see around mental health on social media. Ki there is definitely a lot of conversation happening around mental health, and on, especially on Instagram, you know, stories, posts by posts, wagera. But one can more often than not find them focusing on self-care. I mean, well, of course, that has all the benefits, etc. No doubts, I'm sure. But, you know, are we discounting community care in this whole discourse, you know, by making it too individual-centric? And obviously not discounting the fact that mental health care is definitely inaccessible and not too affordable in India. But do you still think we need to make a move from self-care to community care, where we can come together? And what may be your imagination for this? Both of you,
continuing from the whole idea of a language, and especially Instagram, as you've mentioned, and I have been following all of these things, and I think a part of me, it has helped me in a certain way where I feel, oh, okay, so many people are talking about this, so it is a way of creating solidarities. But having said that, I do believe that social media, because for me, it sometimes becomes a space where the solidarities are just created on a performative basis instead of actually, like a lived experience. It's more so that, okay, this is my work, this is something I'm going to do. So it becomes a technical for performative method to sort of put out a kind of conversation there. But it certainly has, and I think that because there is social media and there is the internet today, and in a globalized world, a lot of movements are also being taken place, especially in times of the pandemic. Also, we've seen how much of the internet has changed, and especially during the pandemic, we've seen mental health pages just flourish like anything on Instagram. A lot of people are talking about this, and there is a lot of conversation where now terminologies like toxic masculinity, are you a narcissist, are you an empath, all these articles and everything What is the information that we're taking in? And that is the problem with the internet as a whole, because everybody having a phone and an internet connection, we have access to a certain kind of knowledge. But exactly, what knowledge are we choosing to allow ourselves to actually understand, study? So research is not something that only people who are doing a PhD should do. Research is something that should be taught at a very young age. How are you supposed to actually do research? So when I go online, I am very conscious of what pages am I following? What is the background? What is the idea, the ideology? What are these things? What is behind what I'm reading? Right. And what is the quality of the research? And I think it's sad that because we've reached a level of being researchers, we are seeing it through that perspective. But that is something that should be instilled in you as a kid. When you're researching on a project, you should know, how am I supposed to go on the internet? What knowledge am I supposed to take? What am I supposed to follow? I cannot read about the Black Lives movements from people's stories and then consider myself, I'm knowledgeable with the politics of race. Right. And that is how people end up being. So everybody thinks that they have a certain kind of acquired knowledge because of social media. And that is, for me, Instagram and social media and all these other spaces become very scary because A, performance is heavy.
True.
And B, people take it lightly, and our egos become bigger because I gave 20 minutes of my day to read one article on some blog, and now I know about this. I know about talking about what is being an empath and our mental health. So that, and also realizing our own issues in our relationships, in our families, fighting for our own basic equal rights. Sometimes we're just doing that, you know? And certainly social media has helped provide spaces like that a lot. And we see that with feminism as well. And that is why today, sometimes being a feminist is ostracized because everybody has a voice today, which is a good thing. I'm not saying that the internet not providing us that space to put ourselves out there is a bad thing. It is a very good thing, but we also have to talk about how it impacts our psychology. We have to understand the politics of the globalized world and how information is being shared, how Instagram is bringing in certain pages from codes, from just our history, everything that is out there, because obviously our lives are not private anymore, and how our psychology is changing with that. How is our psychology actually changing? What language have we started to use? Everybody is using the same language.
Yes.
And who has actually been with toxic masculine men, you know, but women will talk about every man being toxic masculine or every person being in a certain way. Like, I personally dealt with my own idea of toxic masculinity because when I started understanding gender and my choices and understanding patriarchy and heterosexuality, being a normative person, I also didn't want to generalize myself. So I am more conscious of that. I will consistently try and be conscious of it. But I do feel that individually, or as millennials, so to say, we have to be very responsible with the idea of what the internet is giving us today.
Yes, true. Absolutely. I mean, I love the point where you said that sirf hamara, like, only PhD researchers are not the researchers jinko baith ke, you know, research karna chahiye. It's like a basic skill. It should also be like an ethic where you, before you go out and talk about these things, you, I don't know, just do a basic Google search, talk to someone, discuss it before you go out there and post things like that. Neeraj, what are your views on this?
Abhilash, Neeraj, just a second. Abhilash, I would just like to add in terms of that, like, you're just doing the Google research and everything, how artificial intelligence and how our idea of privacy, and exactly just, you know, elaborating on the point that what is the knowledge that we're taking in? So we have to be very cognizant of the fact that artificial intelligence impacts our own intelligence, and it is written by, and who is it written by? Who is producing that knowledge? Who's producing the ideas that we're now, the software and just the whole capitalistic environment of being in this globalized world?
True. True. That's true. Neeraj, you were saying something.
Yeah, okay. I think I just wanted to say, you know, when Santavna ended, I think I'll take it further from their part of it. I think the entire conversation of self-care and community care and other parts, that how, you know, who is talking about self-care? You know, if it's four of us individually, we are talking about, you know, this works for me as a self-care method, that's how I'm doing it. Perfectly fine, you know, if I'm posting it that, you know, this is how, you know, I took a day off, that's a self-care for myself, that's completely fine, I think. As an individual, for sure, great. But you know, what's happening is that, you know, oh my God, the people are enforcing people that, you know, do self-care. You know, this is what self-care looks like. Why don't you, you know, up self-care karo and everything. And the one is also figuring it out that, you know, I'll probably figure it out. No, it's self. And, you know, I'm doing it without even your suggestions probably. So it's collective care, I think. The problem with the self-care is also happening is this entire idea of getting rid of, you know, your responsibility in a way is also that, you know, so I think who can also do certain sort of a self-care, you know, in what limitation one can does it. Like when I look, when, you know, when in a household day-to-day lives during pandemic, when it's completely gendered labor, it's completely clear who is cooking, who is not cooking, and etc. And, you know, I have had been into in those trouble situation where it's clear that, you know, I have been like, okay, mama, I think you should take rest and etc. But, you know, there is like such a gendered idea that even if I do certain things for myself, when I go up and etc., when I'm out of the house, my mother will come back to, you know, work because for my father or somebody else. And who is allowed also, you know, for the certain self-care idea and etc. Because the gender, caste, disability, everything will play in that fashion and etc. And, you know, then the entire structures comes after to you and then ki like aapne self-care nahi kara, aapko pata tha to aapko kar lena chahiye tha. Are, it's not that simple conversation also ki kaun kar sakta hai, kaun nahi kar sakta. And I think there's this entire idea with self-care, we just want to get rid of it. We just want to get rid of it that, you know, this person is in the bother. You take a 1 hour break or, you know, you do certain things for yourself and, you know, and then come back to functionality. So that's the idea. You know, the idea that there is an entire expectation out of self-care method or even a clear idea that, you know, ki aap ek program mein jayenge, aap ye method leke, then, you know, you'll come back to this entire ableist structure that you will probably be able to, but we will not change this ableist structure. We want you to fit into this structure. So I think to complicate this part of it that we don't really need those scripts to come back to it. The one is struggling because of the scripts, not like that, you know, okay, there is something probably wrong with me. I want to have change in the both things. And so one thing, and also to acknowledge, you know, couple of personality traits, you know, some people are melancholy, some people are excited about things. So we don't also need to just categorically look into the DSM categories and always keep fitting them into some specific, you know, disorders and etc. To also celebrate neurodiversity on those parts of it. So I think here the collective care becomes very important. Yeah, or community care, ki, can we support each other or not? And, you know, who can support whom and, you know, what it will look like. So I think these are my points. And I think the very, very last thing I just wanted to say is that I think with the margins, I think the specific thing which is also that I felt that it's more beautiful in its entire journeys of struggles and, you know, activism is the resilience. So resilience bhi apne aap banta rehta hai. And I think that resilience is very strong. It's very difficult to break it into. So something to also just say is that the margin is not only the product of, you know, ki, you know, we are violated and, you know, we are shattered, but we are very, very resilient also. We are fighting it back, we are acknowledging it, what's happening. And so I think to also just make it part of it that the margin is already in the move of, you know, doing a lot of care for themselves. Yeah.
I would just like to in terms of what we're in expansion to this discussion, which I was wondering about today, this whole idea of a more integrated, interdisciplinary approach to mental health, where now we're seeing, and I have also had my psychiatrist, you know, explain mindfulness and meditation and just merging the idea of psychology and science with the idea of spirituality, healing, yoga, and meditation. I would really like to know what are your takes on this?
Take on?
On just this whole merging idea of mixing mental health with spirituality, this language of mindfulness, yoga, and a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists are looking at it and saying that no, now we're realizing that meditation and breathing, the idea of breathing, because yoga comes from that, right? Right. The basis of it is your breath and how you are working with that. So I've been wondering about this.
Nidish, do you want to respond to this first?
Yeah, I think so. So I think, this is happening even in a lot of my practice area, though. But because I think specifically with anxiety and depression, this is, has been the case that even in anxiety, the idea is to focus on your breath. So that is one. And I think now we are also living in those times where a lot of interesting other therapeutic models are coming into the places of like such as art-based therapy, meditation, yoga. So one is also getting more exposed to and, you know, more interdisciplinary it's happening. So, yeah, I think it is there. And in terms of the recovery or, you know, what I don't want to comment on that part of it because it's very subjective. What will work for somebody may not work for, you know. Mm-hmm. But another part of it is that probably we have, you know, like alternative models now that, you know, one can opt for. If you don't want to go for the biomedical model, probably, you know, you have, there's clearly, you know, I don't know what you call it, but there are like retreat spaces that you can go live for a year. Mm-hmm. So that has been a one successful model for some people living with depression and anxiety, even with other severe mental illnesses condition that we consider in DSM, but it has been very different experience for some people. So I think with mental health, I have realized that we just cannot come to one part of it because it's also about, you know, spirituality. It's also about religion. Some people are very religiously driven and, you know, that's why we have all those cultural identities of, you know, in the Darga conversation, the Mandir temple conversation. And it's also, you know, there's a myth that, you know, who goes to it? It's like, really educated people go to this temple areas also, you know, for a lot of mental health conditions. So I think it's very complex. It's interesting. And it's a good attempt that, you know, one is locating it. Is thankfully now psychiatrists are open to interdisciplinary approach. So thanks for bringing this point on, Dabna. Yeah.
Like Neeraj also talked about dargahs, right? So there are I really can't recall the region, but somewhere in Gujarat, there is a very famous darga where people with psychosocial disabilities or mental health disabilities, etc., do go. And there are families that would just leave, whether they are elderly people in their family or kids or even a lot of women, for instance. Like, I think a lot of it has to do with that bit also, that on a personal level, I have also, in moments of extreme desperation almost, tried to chalo meditate karke dekh lete hai, sab itna bolte hai. But also at the same time, to hear it from someone else that, you know, just start meditating, try mindfulness, etc., etc., it will help your anxiety. That's also frustrating because, again, it's like we've talked throughout, that in the end, it also feels like, but tum samajh nahi rahe ho. It's coming from a place that's outside of me, like it's not as much within my capacity, within my body itself. So I think it's a really, for me, it's always been something that's been very tricky because at one point it's also a lot about hope for me personally and in general also, like at the same time, like we've talked about affordability, access. So, wo formal spaces, kitne log access kar sakte hain? I mean, these are more like random questions and thoughts than having any concrete opinion on it, I think. I don't know if Ayushi has more to add to this, I guess.
Yeah, so main to bhi soch hi rahi thi, and I mean, like as Neeraj also rightly pointed out, it's also pretty subjective, and all of that is there. I mean, there are alternative ways of therapy. There is not just one form of therapy, and all said and done. And I think there's also one sort of a distinction that I would make is, yes, spirituality, and there is also some breath work and everything involved. And while I also understand where these questions are emerging from, because there is a larger discourse out there that ki acha aapko anxiety ho rahi hai, okay, just breathe, or like bhai mindfulness, yoga kar lo, dhyan laga lo, and all of those things. And I mean, as much as it, so 2-3 things, I have quite a lot of hope. So I think there is this thing as well, that how many people can, like, what sort of a demographic is this spirituality sort of relating to? I mean, who all would be okay with doing yoga at all? Or like, is yoga just like, or like, are there also going to be ideological differences at play over there? And if they are, if they can be at play with respect to doing or not doing yoga, and then if say my therapist tells me that are nahi tum yoga kar lo, I mean, I'm not so sure if I would be okay with that. Having said that, I mean sort of drawing from what Abhilasha you were also saying, that if say aaj meko depression hai, I mean say kya hai, so usme abhi koi meko aake bolta hai ki acha nahi theek hai meditate kar lo, so हाँ, I agree. मैं कई बारी meditate or breathwork or whatever that word is called, वो अगर मैं कर भी लूँ, तो it's like ये fine, वो 10 मिनट के लिए मैं ठीक हो जाऊँगी. Oh my God, what's my language? But yeah, 10 मिनट के लिए I might feel better. Like 1 घंटे के लिए I might feel better, but my issues are not gonna evaporate. I mean, मेरी professor मुझे harass कर रही है, तो वो तो नहीं गायब हो जाएगा ना breath करने से. मतलब ब्रीथ करने से वो नहीं गायब हो जाएगा. एंड बिकॉज दीज सॉर्ट ऑफ मेथड्स और दीज सॉर्ट ऑफ कॉन्वर्सेशंस आल्सो सॉर्ट ऑफ ब्रिंग द इंडिविजुअल अ लॉट इनटू द सेंटर, दैट कि अरे तुम ये भी कर लो, तुम ये भी कर लो, तुम ये भी कर लो. मतलब जो हम पूरे एपिसोड में भी आई थिंक वी वर डिस्कसिंग अबाउट, एंड सोसाइटी की, समाज की भी कुछ जिम्मेदारियां हैं, एंड उसको हमें लाइक एकदम ही हटा तो नहीं देना चाहिए. एंड द healer bitish, like I personally have seen a lot of scams happening in that space, and I mean there might be a lot of good healers out there as well, because I'm not so very familiar with the entire concept of healers and what sort of healers are out there, and I haven't been to one personally, but since I've seen a lot of scams out there, so I'm a bit skeptical about that. And as for the darga bit, no. So I had went to this so there was this psychiatrist who had come from UK. He was Indian origin. He had come to these Canvas Askew lecture series at Habitat, and so he had mentioned something about that he was working with these dargahs, and so what how they were working was, so they used to go to these dargahs and tell those वहाँ पे बाबा टाइप वाला लोगों को कि आप तो अपना जो कार्यक्रम कर रहे हो आप वो करते रहो, but then you try and convince those people to come and see us, like उनके जो भी affiliated hospitals or clinics वगैरह या doctors से. So that is also happening. मेरे को बस अभी याद आया तो मैंने बता दिया, मेरे को पर बंदे का नाम नहीं याद है कौन था वो.
Yeah.
Santana, what are your views?
Yeah.
I found this conversation first through my psychiatrist, and he told me, you know, now psychology is looking at mindfulness and everything, and it is this. So then and he's like, go back and Google it, and I Googled it, and it made sense. But obviously, you know, practicing yoga and meditation, and the change is not going to happen in a day, right? Even if we bring in those practices that let's look at yoga beyond the idea of it coming from a Hindu structure, Indian culture, and obviously how the West has glorified it in a certain way. And a lot of people have found a lot, you know, healing through it. So I did look into it, and I did think about it also because, you know, my father was very, he's also a person who believes that no. So I've had constant debates with him about it, but like, you know, you're also saying that it's not like you're going to do it and you're going to feel better instantly, right? The people who do it, who find peace through it, who find a certain kind of calmness in their head, it's their experience. And then they say they've done it through a lot of years of practice and finding that. So to each their own, like Neeraj has also said, that everyone has their own ways of figuring out what works for them. And like, I totally believe in an interdisciplinary world at this point. And I think that's the only way forward, because that is the only way we're actually going to start firstly accepting each other and our beliefs. Mm-hmm. And hopefully then, you know, open up more discussions. So I do believe that we cannot shun off any sort of conversations around something that might bring help or some, you know, it might work for someone. But having said that, it certainly takes the spiritual aspect of it. Again, like, I am cynical with it. So even if I do it, how much am I actually going to benefit from it is what I wonder. But of course, the breathing part and some few things I do keep in mind. And like I said, I think in any day when we're having a bad, horrible day, we don't know what we're going to find browsing through our phones that is going to change or make us feel better. We don't know. Because for me, like, I remember one day when I was having a really, really bad, anxiety, and I've Mental Health Talks India was probably the first mental health page I followed. And it had put up a post about, if you're having anxiety right now, do one of these things. And one of them was, go take a shower. And I just did that. And I remember messaging Ayushi and saying, thank you for putting that post today, because instantly I felt better, you know? So I did. So what, I don't know what might trigger me and what might make me feel better. I think it's a journey that individually we'll be taking, learning, growing, finding means and methods of dealing with things. But like I said, we have to be aware of a lot of other aspects to things as well, which is knowing the research behind it, knowing the quality of work that goes behind something.
I just quickly wanted to add, like, almost like a citation, if anyone who's listening or anyone of you is interested in the whole Dargah study and all, there is a TIS master's graduate, Smriti Pari, who's actually done an extensive field work on the same. So maybe you guys can reach out to her, maybe drop us an email and wherever we can connect you guys. Yeah, just like a, sorry, yeah.
Great. So this has been extremely insightful and interesting, of course. And we had initially planned for like 45 minutes to 1 hour. Clearly, we have overshot. But it has been really great. And thank you, both of you, for doing this with us. And you've given us a lot of food for thought. And I'm sure our listeners are going to love this. And just before we leave you, people, can you just, like, do you have any last thoughts or something for us? Just like last quick thoughts.
I just want to say thank you for this opportunity. It has given me time to actually put a lot of thoughts that were just floating in my head, a lot of ideas, a lot of anger, a lot of emotions. And I found a way to sort of put it into words and put out what my thoughts are, and with a certain kind of confidence and belief. And thank you for, you know, providing me a space to be able to do that. I would just here like to add that a couple of my friends, we have also started a podcast called My Experiences Abroad, but it is by three of us who are, we're all three Dalit friends who are talking about being Dalits in India and with our experiences abroad and how those experiences have merged our lives. And something I'm really looking forward to, and I hope you guys also follow and subscribe and enjoy. And sure, my Twitter and Instagram handles are both Santana Kumar. So I would just, you know, like to thank you guys again for this opportunity so much.
Yay! Everyone, please follow Santana K handles and Santana K podcast. हम भी handle share करेंगे, हम उसको link भी कर देंगे कहीं ना कहीं.
It's called My Experiences Abroad and it's on Instagram. I think these guys also have an Instagram page. I came across it. I will follow it today, tonight.
No, I think thank you so much, Abhilasha and Ayushi, for doing this. And, you know, more and more power to both of you. And I think it's a great, great opportunity for me also to, you know, I think this process is a very therapeutic in generally for me. I get a chance to vent out and say and just be myself. So I think it's great. I hope all of us will get job, and I hope that none of the professors are going to listen to this. So
we hope so too.
if they listen, at least I hope they'll be a little humble about it, and you know, and they take it in a right spirit. So it was great, great talking to Santana and being in conversation with both of you. And please, you know, if you want to get in touch with Unsound Project, so I think there is on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. It's by Unsound Project, and my Twitter handle and my Instagram ID is Neeraj Sialkot. So Sialkot is a place where, you know, my ancestor came before partition. We were used to live in Pakistan. So that's what Sialkot is, yeah. So I think I'll connect to Santana for more and more, you know, because she has lived.
It has been so interesting and just amazing being able to do this with you. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you, both of you. It was wonderful. So, winding it up, so that was Neeraj and Santana walking us through some really interesting and helpful insights on mental health in academia. Do check out their work because it's amazing. Their Instagram handles are My Experiences Abroad and The Unsung Project respectively. And thank you so much for tuning in. Lastly, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. You can find us at Academia BTS Podcast. And add PDFs to our Google Drive and do share the podcast with your friends. You will find the link to the drive and the podcast along with other things in our Instagram bio. Otherwise, you can also always drop us an email at academiabtspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.